This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to freedom,
stars tonight.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for May 25th, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or on our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms or applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, no obligation whatsoever. Just click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing page. You click the red rectangle that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or recurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears, joined alongside my co-host and friend, Case Lowe. And Case, this is it. We have watched now all of the round robin portion of King of Gate that will be accessible for us. We have six shows in 2 weeks in the books. I'm a little bit fried, but that's not necessarily for Dragon Gate related reasons. But how are you doing tonight?
Well, Mike Spears, it's currently 81 degrees Fahrenheit in Chicago, Illinois, and I do not have air conditioning in my apartment. And what I have learned over the past week, and I am someone that has described myself, much like Nick Weiger of the Doughboys podcast, as a little bit of a heat seeker. Now, Nick Weiger says that about spicy food. I say that about temperature, okay? I like it hot. I hate cold weather. If I never saw a snowfall again, I would not miss it. But what I'm learning is that I am very sweaty in this apartment, and I have to turn off my big fan when we record this show because my big fan is very loud, and I am currently very sweaty as we record this Open the Voice Gate podcast, and it's admittedly not a great feeling. Like, I love this activity. I love this show. There's a level of self-awareness that I have that sometimes I do get very embarrassed right before we sit down and record. I'm like, okay, this is my life. This is what I've signed up for. Adding sweat to the mix, not great, gonna be honest. Just a kind of a miserable experience right now. But I really enjoyed these King of Gate shows. And other than that, other than the temperature in this apartment, I'm doing very well. Mike, how are you, though?
Brother, it's been the 90s in the upstate. And you know what happened today, like at 7 o'clock, like just an hour before we started recording? We had a summer rain shower that just hit. And let me tell you, there's few pleasures, like few simple pleasures in the world that I love more other than Werther's Original Candy, because I'm an old man at heart, than a nice, cooling summer shower. So
there's something about that, like, I don't know how it is down south, but especially when I lived in Indiana, like a nice summer afternoon hot rain where it's just, oh, God, I love it. I am a big, I don't mind rain. I do not mind rain. I do not mind wind. It is the windy city, after all. I honestly enjoy the heat. I can handle the humidity. I always, when I played baseball as a kid, and I was a high school caliber athlete, humid games put me on the bump. I got seven innings in me if it's humid outside. 100% humidity, I'm 100% locked in. It is the cold weather that bothers me, so I am suffering to some extent, but I'm hanging in there, Mike.
Yeah, it's one of those things that when I was a high school athlete, in Texas, you play soccer in the winter, which a lot of people think, oh, Texas, it's hot all the time. No, not during the winter, and not in Dallas-Fort Worth, where there's, like, no insulation, no ground cover. Like, there's ice storms in Texas. And let me tell you something. You get used to – you never really get used to the cold. I feel like with the heat, you just eventually are like, okay, I'm just a puddle of just human waste. At a certain point, you just feel miserable. But, like, in the cold, especially, like, playing soccer, where, like, yeah, we had long-sleeve shirts, but, I mean – in the early 2000s, there really wasn't such thing as like Under Armour thermal gear that you wear. Like you could put on like a turtleneck and that's it. So I've been used to that, but let me tell you, running around when it's 30 degrees outside, playing center midfielder, getting a ball to the face, not a fun experience at that time.
King of the Hill has led me to believe that people do not play soccer in Texas, so this is very interesting information for me. They do an entire episode, basically, about how much soccer sucks. Yes, the wind. The wind.
One of my top five episodes.
I think it's in my top five, too. It is... that is the salt tablet episode, I believe.
Yes, is the salt tablet episode.
Which I was handed, by the way, at my work yesterday, because I do work in the wacky world of morning radio, and we are always up to hijinks, Mike Spears. Let me tell you, this show, we're a bunch of hooligans in the morning. We are the wildest show there is, and yesterday we had salt tablets that you would smell like if you got a concussion in the 60s. Because that was kind of the remedy for it. I was handed one and I smelled it. I have to say, it did knock me off my feet. Those things do suck. I was kind of shocked. I was like, oh, they're hamming it up for the camera. Like, I bet these aren't that bad. And then I took a whiff, and it sucked shit, quite honestly. It really did. It was not a fun experience.
I just don't, like, maybe it's the advances in modern science, and I had to thank the despicable University of Florida for this with electrolytes, but... people were just like insane about like anatomy. I was thinking physical activity and anatomy and thinking like, oh yeah, because we're sweating a lot, that's salty, we should have something salty too. And it's like, you have something that replenishes your electrolytes, but you shouldn't be like eating a salt lick there. Because that's what I imagine a salt tablet's like what you have a horse, because again, Texas, horses love salt licks. And that's what I'm imagining, that you basically had like miniature versions of that.
I remember being fascinated by those blocks of salt you would give horses when I was a kid, because I had horses growing up. Like I lived on 10 acres and we housed our own horses and then at times other people's horses. And as a kid at the Tractor Supply Store, which is a good store that I have not visited in quite a long time.
Oh, I went to one a couple of weeks ago.
How was that, my experience? I know we've got a ton to get into, but I'd like to hear about your Tractor Supply experience first.
I mean, for one, this was during the mask mandate, so a lot of unhappy people at a Tractor Supply having to wear a mask. And other than that, I mean, I love stores like that. Like in Texas, we had Bucky's, which is basically Wawa, but actually good. I'm just heading towards all fields today. Like, I'm fired up, my dog's sick, we're ready to go. But it kind of reminded me of Bucky's, and my favorite thing at, like, these stores are the kind of candy they offer. I've already mentioned I like Werther Originals. They have black licorice, like the Australian black licorice that I really like. So I loved it. I was having a great time.
The Australian black licorice that I really like. Mike, I'm going to move past that, because that is a sentence that I'm just not quite comfortable with. Let me ask you this before we talk about Dragon Gate, though.
Yeah.
It was a very warm weekend in Chicago, and I think this can kind of – we can kind of segue into Dragon Gate from this, but it's a very warm weekend in Chicago. People were out and about, to say the least. The beaches opened back up. It looked like a normal weekend. I was riding public transportation with people that weren't wearing masks, and quite honestly, I was like, eh, what am I gonna do? I've done my part, and I've done my part for 14 and a half months. I have reached maximum capacity for caring, or really, even to some extent, judging other people. What is it like down south? Because Chicago, you know, we had Lollapalooza announced last week. Riot Fest is happening. Those are both going to be full capacity. It's a normal world again. White Sox went to 60% capacity today. Cubs will surely be back at 100% very shortly. What's it like down south? Is it just back to business as usual?
Brother, it was never out of business as usual down here.
Damn.
Like... You know when really, like, everyone was like, okay, we're done with this in South Carolina? Which is just insane. It's insane. Like, I'm not going... It should be very clear now about my general beliefs about these sort of things. They decided that they were done with this case last Easter.
I mean,
last Easter.
There's a realistic argument to be made, and I'm not sure I'd be the one to make it, but I would certainly listen to the case that America was never fully, truly locked down. That
no.
Even during the first 3 weeks, it was like, well, like, we can go out a little bit. And it just blows my mind, especially with what has gone on in Canada recently, with obviously what's happening in Japan. America did not learn any lessons from the pandemic. We are simply sweeping it under the rug, and I'm guilty of that as well. It's whatever.
It's the world we live in, man. Like, it's sadly the state of things in this country. But, you know, It is. I forgot how you were going to segue here, so let's just get into it, guys.
I was hoping for like a COVID attendance tie-in, because as of the time we're recording this, and we should note this is May 25th, as of the time we're recording this, the Cork and Hall show for next week, the King of Gate Finals, is on. Things could change, though. That show is scheduled for June 3rd, that is next Thursday, in Cork and Hall. Like I said, the finals of the King of Gate tournament are supposed to be there, but I was reading today that the state of emergency that is due to be lifted on May 30th could be extended, so we will see what happens there.
Yeah, it seems like that the big thing is that they aren't like shutting down these things. Like, obviously, like they wouldn't be doing the shows that have been happening in Cork and already if they were able to shut down, or they didn't shut down or allow these venues to open. But we'll see how things are going. I mean, it's a mess. It's a mess. I think that's like something that everyone can agree with, is that it's a mess, the situation in Japan. However, in the one of the northernmost islands in the Japanese archipelago, in Hokkaido, there were three shows that happened at the Sapporo E1 Stadium. I don't know how ever we pronounced it last time. I'm going to say the E1, it's two eyes in a row, stadium. It was the triumphant homecoming of both KZ and BB Hulk. And we had a lot of stuff go on these shows, but just off the top, just big picture look about it. We'll get into like how the blocks are at the end of the show, just because there was that Chiba show that happened before that, and there were these shows that happened after it. But just off the top, in my opinion, really fun shows. Each show was about 2 hours in length. Each of them had the first show had three King of Gate matches. Of course, that's because Benkei and Naruki Doi have been pulled due to COVID restrictions and due to precaution. But we had seven King of Gate matches through the weekend. A lot of other stuff. We had the Speedstar Final Countdown in Sapporo. I had a good time. I don't know if I think I liked last week's set of shows more than this week's set of shows, but I mean 6 hours of wrestling, and there was a lot of good stuff that happened.
Yeah, I would co-sign that take. I think last week's shows, obviously the empty arena show, which was really strong top to bottom, and then the two shows in Fukuoka that had Yamato versus Okuda, Dragon Kid versus KZ, Eita versus Dragon Kid, and Shun Skywalker versus Kaito Ishida, among others. I think those shows top to bottom were a little stronger than these, but I can point to at least one thing on every single one of these shows, and I can say I really enjoyed that. That was either well done, it was smartly executed, it was great. In some cases, two really great matches, I thought, this weekend. So another enjoyable experience. I think all of the tournament matches that aired this weekend are worth your time. Even if they're not lighting up these spreadsheets or the notebooks to some extent, I think they're all worth your time. And there was one show in Hokkaido that I thought had a really strong undercard as well, but we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Yeah, I think that's all entirely fair. So the shows were on the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. That means they'll remain up on the network until the 28th through the 30th consecutively. And it's one of those venues that we've talked about this before. I've kind of initially, like, aesthetically, I was like, I don't know if I really like this venue. Having some Joe Lanza instead of exposed basketball goals, we had a lot of indoor soccer stuff. But, you know, it's just easy watches and you can get through them real quick. Starting off on night one on May 21st, attendance was 215. Should we do the same plan that we did last time, that we'll briefly run down all the non-tournament matches and if we have any big thoughts, and then we'll go to the big tournament matches and really get more in depth on those? We probably should have talked about this before we hit record.
No, Mike, there's nothing I love more in wrestling podcasts than an on-air production meeting. All of the best do it, and we are no different than them, and I think that's a great plan. Let's breeze through the undercard, and then let's hit the tournament matches hard.
All right, so for night one on May 21st, as I just mentioned, opened up with the unaffiliated tag team Don Fuji and Azushi Kanda versus the Masquerade team of Shun Skywalker and Kota Minenora. It was Kota Minenora getting the fall on Yuzushi Kanda in 11 minutes and 36 seconds with the Engranaje submission hold. Match 2, the Double Dragons, Ultimo and Bukudomo, faced Maraha Isapa, Genki Horiguchi, and Ryo Saito. It was Maraha Isapa, one of the pillars of the Dragon Gate Tag Team Division throughout history, getting the win as Genki Horiguchi called up the heavens with a backslide from heaven on Bukudomo Dragon in 9 minutes and 26 seconds. And then the only other non-tournament match was an eight-man tag. It was high-end plus Problem Dragon, as it was Yamato, Dragon Kid, and Keisuke Okuda along with Problem Dragon versus RED of Ada, BB Hulk, Diamante, and Hio, which went to a double countout, which became kind of a theme of the weekend. And I'm just going to get this out of the way. My man of the weekend is the person who became the master of the double countout. He has the biggest brain in all of wrestling. It is Hio. So just getting that out of the way right here, right now. Love big brain Hio here. But this undercard, I thought overall, you know, what it was just kind of what I was going to expect there. The double countout was a little bit underwhelming, but played into how the weekend went. But everything else on in the undercard was to expectations, if not a little bit better than that, I would say.
Yeah, I've got no real thoughts on the first two matches other than the fact that they'll never have a singles match. There's no reason for them to, but I do think Shun Skywalker and Don Fuji have a really nice chemistry with one another. We can probably talk about Shimizu at some point on one of these later shows, but this was a weekend where I just did not want him on my screen, and I felt like every time he was on there, he took up a very large amount of time. As for the high-end versus RED match, that double countout match, one, the vision of Problem Dragon teaming with high-end is hilarious. No man has ever looked more out of place. He did not fit in. He did not match them. It was very, very funny to look at, quite honestly. It in the ring, it was, you know, not exactly the RED A team. It was Hulk, Diamante, Eita, and Hio, and it was just, God, Problem Dragon was so overmatched by just their skill and their technique. But we had not talked about any of these shows. I do not know your thoughts. I adored this double countout stuff, and I don't even blame people that are going to watch these shows and they're not going to be into it. I think it is very specifically a Dragon Gate thing or a Dragon System thing, because it goes back to Toriyama and M2K. But the way that they milked these double countouts, I thought was so entertaining, and I was so into the Yamato versus Hio stuff this entire weekend. I think it's going to be a real divider of people that are either wildly entertained by this or they thought it was a waste of time. That's fine. I have no argument for it other than the fact that I love it. I think it's something, the way Dragon Gate does it, it's really unique to them. It's over with me, and Yamato and Hio were the perfect guys to do this with. Yamato breaking out at times into a full-on track star sprint to get in the ring before the 20 count. I have never seen this man run this fast before. I did not know this man could run that fast, and he would do it and break the count at 19. He did it in this match, and he certainly attempted to do it in their block play match. I was wildly entertained by this, and Hio is a guy who currently sits at 0 points as of the time of this recording, and I think he's going to end up being one of the most important people in the entire King of Gate tournament this year.
Well, I mean, just as a reminder for folks, Hio is the reason why there was a Toriyama versus RED Loser Must Disband match. He is the straw that stirs the drink. He has the biggest brain in all of Dragon Gate. And we got to see that again, and it's something that I love. I mean, like, I've historically been the high man on Hio. He's someone that I've always kind of felt a certain pull towards, to be quite honest. And I think him and Yamato had a whole lot of fun this weekend, and the way that they played this off and the way that when we get into the block play match, the Yamato sprint and then getting tripped at 19 was just fantastic. And, you know, on this podcast, we love and respect the big brain.
I talked about this last week after the Kaito Ishida match from the Empty Arena show, which I would really recommend people check out if they haven't seen it. I don't know if that show's still on the network or not. Do not ask me. But I do know that I talked about after that match about how, you know, Hio is not going to be in that same spot as Ben K or Shun Skywalker, his classmates who are now, you know, one's a current Dreamgate champion, one's the former Open Dreamgate champion. He's never, ever, ever going to be on that level. The company will fold before he challenges for a Dreamgate title. But he has carved out his own niche. And 5 years into his career, he has a defined character and one that I find to be super entertaining. He's not just a guy on the roster that's smaller than the other small guys. He's not just a guy that is good, but not good and not as good as the rest of the roster. Hio has his own deal. And this mastermind, almost like edge-like ultimate opportunist character that he's kind of doing, I think it rocks. I really enjoyed him throughout this weekend. And I wish what he had coming up was making tape. I'm super curious to see how he finishes this tournament, because he currently has he's got two matches left. He's got three. I don't know what I'm talking about. He's got Okuda, UT, and Shun Skywalker left, and I think all of those matches could be super fun.
It's something where, in this company, that it's so reliant on charisma. Having someone who portrays his kind of charisma and the way he portrays it, I think he's great at doing the character work here. And the fact that, from all appearances, he's a pretty good promo as well. Like, he's going to have a role here. And it's something that, like, you know, he's been lapped by his juniors at this point. And that's totally fine, because he has a solid role that I think he does a really good job at. And I think that it's something that I'm going to be real excited to see how the remainder of the tournament does, because he kind of has really embodied the idea of being the ultimate spoiler. And that's something that I think is really kind of cool. And I think that's something that he's someone that, whatever the whole shakeup happens when the unit thing is done in August, I really hope he remains a heel, because I feel like he has a very well-established heel role that I don't want to go to waste.
It's an odd thing to say, given just the sheer amount of greatness we've seen not only in this promotion over the past year since the start of the pandemic, but just wrestling in Japan in general. The Yamato Hyo stuff, I think, is some of, like, it was so damaged by not having crowds, and it's such a bummer, because this is stuff that even, like, you don't even have to put this in Korakuen or Osaka. You just keep this in this building, but give this audience a chance to make noise. And I think you have people shrieking at the top of their lungs for Yamato to get back in the ring, because I don't have any doubt that it was over in the building, and I'm not gonna, you know, judge by the decibels of the claps by any means, but it seemed like it got over in the building. It just seems like one of those things that could have been taken to the next level had we been living in an alternate universe, but unfortunately we are living in this timeline.
Absolutely. It's sad the world we live in, but it's something that, you know, this does get a reaction. You did notice, like, the audience did let out kind of a gasp when it happens, and you know, it's something that we, if they're willing to do that in Dragon Gate, then we know that they would have reacted like crazy, you know. So it's pretty safe to say that as well. You don't really have any other thoughts on the undercard stuff? I mean, it kind of was there. The only notable thing was Minenora getting the fall rather than Skywalker, right?
Yeah, no, let's talk about the tournament matches.
All right, so the first tournament match was in the C block on the 21st. It was UT who walked into Hokkaido in this night at 1-1 with 2 points, and his opponent had the same standing 1-1 and 2 points in Kaito Ishida. It was Kaito Ishida winning with the ankle hold in 10 minutes and 30 seconds, so that moves him to 4, whereas UT remains square at 2.
I thought this match was okay. I certainly liked their 2019 outing more. I think that was a show in Osaka number 2, if I believe. That was a part of the rookie ranking tournament. And that was kind of the first time as a singles where we were like, oh my god, Ishida could really be something. And man, if UT stays healthy, this character is a lot of fun. It ended up working out well for both guys. I thought it was very interesting the way that Ishida took most of this match. He seemed to do a lot of the selling here. UT worked over his leg. And then at the very end, things flipped, and Ishida was able to put on the ankle lock and get the win. A fine match. They've certainly had better. Like I said, I'm looking at it now. The January 13th, 2019 match from Osaka between these two, I thought was a stellar, stellar performance by both guys. But this was okay. I gave this 3.25.
I was a little higher. I went 3.5. The thing that I was drawn to with this case, and this might just be me, I thought it was really interesting. Like, the opening was strike trading, and UT very quickly was like, oh, this isn't working for me. And then he, like, took it to the ground, and then he tried to go misdirection and impact, and he did a great tope there. And I thought, like, that was one of those things that makes UT one of my favorite wrestlers in this company to watch. Just very cerebral in that way. But this was a very much a different match than 2019. I'm totally in agreement with you on that. And the only, like, other note that I would add to it is I know someone in the front row who was living and dying for UT. You could even, like, tell through the mask, because they would start clapping, or they would, like, grip their fists, make fists for, like, during, like, the near falls with that, and had, like, a huge sigh when UT tapped out. And it's nice to see that. I enjoy, like, getting any sort of crowd reaction right now, and getting that added a little bit of enjoyment to this matchup where a lot of matches don't necessarily have that.
Well, I think it speaks to where UT is at in his career right now, where this is now, because of how long he stayed healthy, it's the best run of his career. He's getting respect in the booking. Like I said, you know, he was pretty dominant for a good chunk of this match against Ishida, who's clearly been someone who's now been put on that second tier of guys, you know, a Dreamgate challenger, not necessarily a Dreamgate contender. And UT took it to him, and that was great to see, and that shows that, you know, one, he's got some respect in the booking. Two, I think he's a guy that, again, assuming we get vocal crowds by the end of this year, I think we're going to see a really strong vocal response for UT, and he deserves it because he continues to put in not only really strong work, but really interesting work. He's a guy that I feel like every match we're seeing of him in any sort of featured capacity, it's always going to be very good because he's a guy that really, as long as he stays healthy, he does not miss. But I feel like he's constantly doing different things. And this Ishida match, not my favorite thing, worked in a slower tempo than I was kind of hoping. I was hoping they would just go out there and throw bombs. Instead, they worked this really kind of methodical match where Ishida just pulled out the win. And it was a strong effort from both guys and speaks once again to the work that UT's been doing.
Absolutely. And then the semi-main event was in the B block. It was Sumi Yokosuka, who walked in at 1-0 with 2 points, versus SP Kento, who walked in at 1-1, 2 points. SP Kento got the win with a rebound German suplex hold in 14 minutes, 52 seconds, which moves him to 4 and keeps the Sumu at 2.
I've said it since SP Kento started working singles matches. I think the way his matches are laid out are very deliberate. I think they're very formulaic. And I think they're going to pay massive dividends to him in the future, because this was a 14-minute match that was really just a condensed structure of a Dreamgate match. It started really slow. There wasn't a ton you could sink your teeth into for the first start of this match, for the first half of this match, really. Once they got going, this was one of the strongest, if not the strongest, singular SP Kento singles match performance I have seen. I thought he was incredible in this match, and that's no disrespect to the Tim Duncan of pro wrestling, Sumi Yokosuka, who, of course it's Yokosuka, who was able to guide this 18-month pro, because that's what he is at this point, he's a pro, but he was able to guide this 18-month pro into this super compelling match that, again, had real slow pacing, had a natural build to it, and had a super hot finish. I was right on the cusp of going notebook with this. I went 3 3/4. But like I said, perhaps in a singles capacity, the best thing SP Kento has done so far.
Yeah, it's something where, you know, I know that there is a kind of a discourse that is that SP Kento has the character work down, but the ring work is still coming together. I felt like that, I mean, Sumi Yokosuka, one of the best wrestlers of all time, in my opinion, and the Tim Duncan is pro wrestling, as you aptly put it, he held up his own. Like, this was a little bit more grounded. The one thing that, one of my other big takeaways weekend, everyone loves the Kimmel Clutch now.
It's not the move that I thought would make a comeback in wrestling.
Right.
I'm not totally stoked about it, but it's here and I can't do anything about it.
No, I am totally with you on that as well. But fun, really fun finishing stretch. And, you know, these are like the matches that for someone so young in his career, being able to work with Sumi Yokosuka in a singles context, I mean, what's better than that to improve your wrestling skill, you know?
Do we know on SP Kento's background? I mean, I'm assuming just because he was so young and took, well, I've got a specific question here of, like, he was so young and took to this so quickly. Do we know if he grew up a big fan of this promotion? Because there's stuff that he seems to get at a higher level than really anyone else I've seen at this point in their career. Because there's a moment in this match where R.E.D. goes to attack Susumu with the box. SP Kento, I think it was a box attack. It was some sort of heel interference that backfires, and they hit SP Kento instead. And then Yokosuka bounces off the ropes, hits a Jumbo Nokachi, and they get a super close near fall on it, which the kick out was marvelous as well. But that was just one of those things. Like, that's a signature Drangate spot. And I thought the timing that SP Kento had on it was, you know, the same that a Yamato or a Mochizuki or, you know, a KZ, a veteran at this point, they would have that sort of timing. I just thought SBK was in the perfect place at the perfect time, and I am just so impressed by this guy that, again, he's not going to win my most outstanding this year. He's not really lighting up my spreadsheet, especially in singles matches, but this guy's so fucking good. I can't believe how good he is.
It's something where I think his background might be in amateur wrestling, just because, like, I've noticed his years, he has a little bit of cauliflower to him, so... But I don't know his background as, like, a wrestling fandom. I would absolutely love to know. Like, of course, like, UT's fandom is notorious at this point. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, I would imagine that SP Kento, because he's a Aichi Nagano, not Nagano, Nagoya guy as well. Like, I'd be wondering to see if he was someone that, as a kid, was going to these shows at this time, as he was one of the first debutees who debuted after the Dragon System existed.
Yeah, I mean, SP Kento, if he grew up a Dragon Gate fan, he probably has marked pictures on an iPhone. Like, he's probably posing with Monster Express as a teenager, because he's my age.
Do you think he's hitting the too easy pose?
God, I need to hack into this man's phone and find that picture. Because it would be like the late stage Monster Express. Like, it would be a funny picture of Yoshino, T-Hawk, and Sachihoko Boy, and then a very young Kento Kabune hitting the too easy for Monster Express. And there's no, I hope I just willed this into existence. There's no picture I want to exist more than that.
I mean, Case, as you well know, I have weird abilities to speak things into existence. I'm imparting this power onto you right now. I would love to see this happen.
I love this main event, Mike. I want to talk about this. Jason Lee versus KZ. I want your thoughts on it first.
All right, so Jason Lee walked in here 0-2, 0 points. So he really, this was do or die for him in the tournament. KZ was at 1-1 with 2 points. And this absolutely fucking rocked. It's not a match of the tournament. Match of the tournament still probably is Yamato versus Shun Skywalker. I still went 4.25 on this, but absolutely rocked. The finish was Jason Lee hitting the maximum driver clean in the hometown area of KZ to finally get on the board, get 2 points, and KZ remained square at 2. And boy, Jason Lee in this thing, like, we talk about Jason a lot on this program. I feel like that we've been the people who've been waving, like, Jason Lee is the best kept secret in wrestling. Jason Lee would be the best junior heavyweight in nearly everyone's division by leaps and bounds if he was there. And tremendous, like, performance there. And then KZ as well. And the thing that my big takeaway was, like, these are two guys who, at one point, KZ had a very similar role as Jason Lee has right now, right? Like, he was the plucky guy, like that was able to be, like, the mat worker and was the guy who fired up, who developed, like, the crowd connection. And that's really kind of where he was with Dia Hearts when he turned face and returned after his injury. And that's kind of similar to where Jason Lee is as well. But I adored this match. This match was my match of the weekend.
Mike, they are so similar that 5 years ago, May 28th, 2016, King of Gate A Block in Hokkaido, Sapporo, KZ beat Shingo Takagi in the upset of the tournament. And mind you, an incredibly similar finish. That is exactly it. Jason Lee is filling that KZ role right now of when he was in Dia Hearts. And it started off pretty quiet. And I really think it started with that Brave Gate match with KZ and Tozawa, where, you know, we kind of looked around, and all of a sudden, it was like, KZ lost weight, he got new gear, he turned face. I was like, wait a minute, is KZ really good now? Like, what happened? Because I certainly wasn't prepared for this, and then he was quietly having these undercard matches that I really liked, and then he got in King of Gate that year, and he had a good King of Gate, and that Shingo match is terrific. That whole set of shows was really fun, but that Shingo match, I knew it off the top of my head 5 years later, because it was such a fun match. But, yeah, I'll say it again. I've said it on this podcast before. I tweeted it this weekend. I don't think there's a better junior heavyweight that is active in wrestling right now than Jason Lee. And I'll throw a few qualifiers on there, because I understand that's a heavy-handed statement. But Hiromu was hurt, so he is out of the equation right now. And Hiromu has now had two career-threatening injuries. So I don't know what we're looking at when we get him back into the fold. There is no other junior in New Japan right now that I think is either as consistently entertaining or, quite frankly, as good as Jason Lee. I think you can point to El Desperado, but Despy is always super hit and miss with me. And what I've learned is that I am typically on the miss side with Despy compared to most people. Now, if you want to come back with El Desperado, fine. Look, he's not my guy. I think he often wildly underwhelms, quite frankly. But if you like El Desperado, you like him. I understand he has a passionate fan base. I get that. Taiji Ishimori, Dragon System guy. Love Ishimori. Super underrated in NOAH for all those years. Went to New Japan. Crushed it in New Japan. Almost, in a way, was Shingo before Shingo, where this guy just quietly backdoored his way into the company. It was like, oh, I bet he'll do okay there. Oh, he's junior champion. Oh, he's about to win Super Juniors. Like, Ishimori moonwalked into that company and then moonwalked to the top of the juniors division. But Taiji Ishimori, at this stage in his career, one, doesn't move around great. Two, I just don't think he's as consistent as Jason Lee. I've seen some bad Taiji Ishimori matches. I've seen some lame efforts from him. I don't think we get that from Jason Lee. I don't even know at this point. You know, the New Japan Juniors division has been so depleted by COVID and by guys jumping. I don't think there's anybody worth discussing there. So you bounce over to Noah. And Noah's junior division is my least favorite thing in wrestling, not because of the talent. The talent is tremendous. It is far and away, though, the worst booked thing in wrestling outside of Noah's heavyweight division. So you've got guys like Katoge and Harada, who are past their prime. They're good, but they're past their prime. You've got a guy like Kotaro Suzuki, obviously Ogawa, same story. Seki Yoshioka is the one name that was thrown at me on Twitter when I had a little thread about this at Open Voice Get on Twitter. You can read that. Yoshioka is a very interesting argument. I think he is someone who rapidly improved once he started teaming with Shima and Strong Hearts and Wrestle One, because he was kind of aligned
with them. Big stunner there.
Yeah. Oh, somebody got better working with Shima. No way. But he was kind of placed in Wrestle One as the permanent Strong Hearts affiliate because Shima and T-Hawk and Lindemann, they weren't working the house shows. Yoshioka was there, and he was always their Strong Hearts guy. And he was great. Great in multi-man matches, great in singles matches. To me, it's a crime that he lost the GHC Junior Heavyweight title as soon as he did. I thought he could have rode out that reign for quite a long time, but instead we had to put the belt back on Kotoge for some reason. I don't get it, but I also don't understand this division. You look at All Japan, and my brain goes to Shima, quite honestly. I think Shima is the only junior in that division that I find to be consistently entertaining. For as much as I love Shima, I will take Jason Lee over him at this stage in his career, although I do think Shima's still very good. And then from there, like the one thing that I don't know what to do, I don't know what to do with the DDT guys, because they're all, they don't really work a junior heavyweight style. Do you know what I mean? Is that a fair assessment that most of the DDT roster, even though they're smaller guys, like, I don't look at them as juniors.
Sure. I'm sorry, DDT is not a promotion for me. I recognize that a lot of them are really talented, but I just know it's not for me.
No, so. I mean, look, if it's not Sakaguchi and Higuchi, I'm very rarely turning on the DDT these days, but I'll leave them out of the equation because, again, I look at those guys as heavyweights for the most part. So you end up with the only other two guys I could think of were Abe and Nomura from Big Japan, the Astronauts, and I think they're great. I think if somebody wanted to say that Fuminari Abe was better than Jason Lee, look, I'm not going to fight you to the death about it. I think Lee peaks a little bit higher. I think Abe, just because of human factors of being in Big Japan and working all of these small indies that he does, whereas Jason Lee has a steady job and is a somewhat pushed commodity in Dragon Gate. You know, he takes advantage of these big spots. I'm going to take Lee over him, but I think Abe is certainly someone that I would at least listen to an argument about. And Mike, that's kind of the junior heavyweight scene in Japan right now in terms of men's wrestling. And it got me to thinking about a larger point that I don't know if junior heavyweight wrestling in Japan has ever been as depleted as it is right now. I made this point in the Voices of Wrestling Slack a few weeks ago when we were talking about Gleet, among other things, and the new FMW reboot and all that, that it's just wild to me that you have all of these shit-tier indie promotions popping up, people that won't draw, people that are spreading things out and making it harder for promotions to have really strong rosters. And there's no Michinoku Pro-type promotion. There's no Osaka Pro-type promotion. There's no even grimy El Dorado-type promotion. It's all just kind of bad cast-off heavyweight wrestling, and I don't remember a time in Japan where it's been this dire.
It's something where, like, the person who's currently active, like, there's two people who I think are excellent currently active. I think Matt Sydal might be having some of the best work of his career right now. I think he's been excellent in AEW, so I would put him up there. And then you have people who don't really wrestle the junior heavyweight style. The only other person, and he does not wrestle a whole lot, and I will readily admit I do not watch this company, but he has enough reputation that I don't think he's suddenly gone to hell, is Dragon Lee. Like, Dragon Lee is like the name I would put up there. People who are currently active, take Hiromu out. Hiromu, you know, who knows what Hiromu is going to be like when he comes back. I think that it's like Matt Sydal, it is Jason Lee, and it is Dragon Lee right now.
Dragon Lee is a great shout. That is a name that I had not thought of. That's a great point. Unfortunately, much like you, not spending a ton of time with empty Ring of Honor wrestling. Not something that I have on my to-watch list, not something that I have watched already. So we'll kind of circle back when they get an audience there. But it is weird to think that Ring of Honor has become the hotbed for luchadors in the U.S. Indies, or I guess just in the U.S. scene. But yeah, that is the thing about Jason Lee. He works a distinctly junior heavyweight style. That is a junior when you watch him wrestle. I think another name you could throw out there if you want to expand it to the globe is Jonathan Gresham. But I'll take Lee over Gresham any day. I mean, I think Gresham's talented. I also think he's really overrated. I find, you know, him to be entertaining to an extent, but someone that I've never really totally gotten the hype there, whereas Lee is someone that I've obviously connected with. So in terms of guys that are junior heavyweights that are working a junior heavyweight style, which I think is easily recognizable when you see it, it's Jason Lee for me. I think he's so good. In this match with KZ, just incredible. I mean, they did so much stuff that I liked in this match. There was fire. There was a time where Jason Lee got laid out with that KZ uppercut that he hits a million times. It always looks good. And Jason Lee popped up and fired back. I thought it was tremendous. There's another time KZ is going for the Sky to Schoolboy, and Jason Lee leverages his weight, counters it, and nearly beats KZ with a counter that I've never seen before. And it looked fluid when they did it. Like it that's a spot that can look really, really corny and really fake if you do it wrong. I thought they nailed it. There was so much stuff that I liked in this match. So he closes it out with a maximum driver for the win. A 4.5-star affair for me and my match of the weekend as well.
It's something like, even like KZ throwing him some love, because I mean, it's just as much him as this. That was the most brutal looking shotgun headbutt I've ever seen. Like, maybe it might have been where the hard cam was in the corner he did it in, but he like went straight into Jason Lee's stomach in the corner. I was like, that's insane. Like, just was an excellent performance from both guys. And yeah, easily the match of the weekend in both of our books. And we did the show of a masquerade, and Jason, go home, with Jason cut a very sweet promo saying, thank you all for coming. See you tomorrow. Which, how can't you love Jason Lee? He's the best.
I don't necessarily have anything to add on KZ other than the fact that I am just in love with his work right now. And I was really against, I will take the L on this one, because I think I'm going to take the W on this Jason Lee thing. I think more people are going to come around to me. And if you disagree with that take, please let me know at Open Voice Gate. I would really like to, one, just the direness of the Japanese junior heavyweight scene, I think, is a really interesting topic that people aren't talking about. And two, who better than Kanya? No, I mean Jason Lee. Who better than Jason Lee? But as for KZ, there's nothing else I could say. I mean, the dude is just killing it right now. I mean, I don't think he's the next Open the Dreamgate champion, but if he is, I will have no complaints. I really thought this Natural Vibes 2.0 thing was going to suck. I was not excited for it. I didn't like the idea of a reboot. I was recently compiling some information for something where I was listing every Dragon Gate unit ever, and Natural Vibes being a 2.0 deal where it's the same unit name, the same colorway, it's just bizarre and it sticks out, and I was against it. And I hope it's not something that they continue doing. I really don't want to see this again. But Natural Vibes 1.0 looks like such a rough draft compared to what they have now with Kamei and with UT and Horiguchi and Susumu and KZ. That is the most locked-in unit there is right now. I think they're awesome. I love the dance. I don't get grumpy about the dance. I'm an adult. I can handle a little bit of dancing. A little bit goes a long way, but I'm fine with what they're doing. And he's the man. This was a phenomenal way to close out this show in a must-see match between KZ and Jason Lee.
Well, it's something about Natural Vibes version 2, where the original thing about Natural Vibes was, it's the energy you feel when your friends are all together. And I mean, we got five good friends here. I mean, was Punch Nobunaga really a friend of those, the core three guys? No. They used his dad's dancing studio. Literally, they used his dad's dancing studio. And then, I mean, Brother Yashi in Dragon Gate, his return, we'll remember that he came back, really, to be honest. So yeah, no, Natural Vibes version 2. And I mean, hey, if you're so turned off by something that happens before the match, you're watching the wrong promotion. Just don't bother, because if that's the energy you're having towards it, then you're just not going to be able to. And I'm willing to make a broad proclamation. You're not able to, like, appreciate what this company is, because dancing in this promotion is something that has been a thing since Toriumon, like, since Dofixer. You just have to get with the program. This is what it is. So
don't bother, says Mike Spears. I enjoy a little bit of gatekeeping as we move on to night two of King of Gate in Hokkaido.
Yeah, I'm operating on very low sleep right now. I'm just not pulling punches right now. If you're gonna be a no fun police about that, then I'm sorry. Go watch Empty Arena Ring of Honor. I don't care.
The thing I like about Mike Spears, he's like a seller comic. Okay, this guy tells it like it is. He doesn't care who he offends. Okay, Mike Spears is as real as it fucking gets. And if you don't like dancing in Dragon Gate, don't bother.
I mean, should I be like the seller comic coming up with my leather jacket, putting it over the mic stand, you know, like doing it that way, like real 80s style?
Look, this is not the show to get into this. Stand-up comedy just kind of needs to fucking reboot. I am so annoyed at just the idea of this art form currently. Everybody needs to take a deep breath, devalue their place in society. And then maybe we could have some stand-up again. But right now, these comedians are thinking far too highly of each other.
Yeah, talking about the art. The art. Anyways.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. And I just want to let you know about a brand new sponsor we have for the network. It's Eufy. And let me tell you a little bit about their newest product, the Eufy VideoSmart E3. 30. This isn't your everyday smart lock. This is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell offering triple the security and triple the convenience. Instead of loading up your door with a bunch of different devices, you install one and it takes care of everything in a complete package. It's not just about the home security though. The Eufy Video Smart Lock E3 30 is also for convenience. No more worrying about losing keys. You can let each member of your family get a password. You can monitor their movement in and out of the house. You can keep an eye on your packages. You can check in on your house while you're away. There is so much you can do with this product. Best of all, it is easy to install and set up. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. Leave that drill in the toolbox. The Eufy has keyless entry, a 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, a rechargeable battery with a 4-month lifespan, two-way audio from the lock, enhanced night vision, 24/7 customer support, and you'll love this, none of those pesky monthly fees. Eufy sent me a Smart Lock 330 and I've loved it so far. It allows me peace of mind when I'm at work or when I'm away on one of my patented vacations. Plus, it helps me keep track of deliveries to the house, saves me a trip back to the car if I just need to run in for something and I forgot my keys, and the two-way audio system works well for those unwanted guests at my front door. No, I do not need new siding or windows or a roof. Thank you, though. You can simply tell them you aren't interested from the comfort of your couch. Now, are you ready to ditch the others and join the Eufy revolution? Of course you are. Get started today by searching Eufy Video Lock on your search engine of choice. That's E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can finally, once and for all, gain complete control of your door. Once again, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock. eufyofficial.com/videolock, and we thank them for sponsoring the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network.
May 22nd, returning to Sapporo E1 Arena, a stadium rather, attendance 257, so building up. Running through the undercard stuff, we had the opener was a unaffiliated versus Masquerade plush Problem Dragon, because Problem Dragon, you know, he got plugged in everywhere this weekend, and it was wild. Ultimo Dragon, Izushi Kanda, and Ryo Saito versus Jason Lee, La Estrella, and Problem Dragon. Jason Lee got the win with a maximum driver on Ryo Saito in 11 minutes, 56 seconds. Singles match, Keisuke Okuda versus Don Fuji. Keisuke Okuda won with a half Boston Crab in 8 minutes and 4 seconds. Match 3, a tag team match, Masquerade versus R.E.D. It was Shun Skywalker and Kota Minenora versus Kaito Ishida and SB Kento. Kaito Ishida got disqualified in 10 minutes and 34 seconds because he just kind of like just flipped out and started doing box attacks, and referee Nakagawa was not having any of it. And then match 4, Natural Vibes versus RED. KZ Genki Horiguchi and UT versus BB Hulk, Eita, and Diamante. So this is the two former North Tribe guys on opposite sides representing Hokkaido. It was the RED side, so it was BB Hulk defending Sapporo against Ebetsu as BB Hulk defeated Genki Horiguchi with the first flash in 13 minutes and 46 seconds. And, okay, it's the one match that I really enjoyed, and of course I would. Keisuke Okuda versus Don Fuji having an 8-minute match where they just kicked each other in the legs a whole lot, and then Keisuke Okuda doing the Boston Crab and winning the match, and Don Fuji limping and having to shake his hand on the way out. I mean, what's not to love about that?
This whole undercard, I don't know how you feel about it, but obviously Okuda versus Fuji was exactly what you would hope it would be. They know what they do well. Don Fuji's overhand chop, you know, that
oh, God, just it, slapping.
It might be the most painful-looking move in wrestling. Like, I can think of pile drivers and 450 splashes and, you know, like, crazy Roderick Strong suplexes that I would rather take than Don Fuji with that overhand slap, like you said, to the neck. Oh, my God, that looks like it sucks. And he just paintbrushed Okuda with so many of those in this match. That was obviously fun. And then you had these next two matches, Skywalker Minoru versus Ishida and SB Kento, which is a match I would like to see in a bigger setting with a clean finish, because I thought these guys killed it up until the disqualification finish, which, you know, I understand I wasn't crazy about it here, but I get it. And then, Mike, I don't know about you, but I almost went spreadsheet with this RED versus Natural Vibes match. I went 3 3/4 with it.
I think this is like the one match where we have a little bit of disparity. I feel like they didn't take it out of second gear at all for this match.
There was something about the crispness of Natural Vibes here in particular, and I thought RED held with them. This was an all right night for BB Hulk. Eita looked good this entire weekend. Diamante had a crazy sequence with KZ in this match where they were just in lockstep with one another doing these wild lucharesu sequences that I was all about. But there was something about Natural Vibes here. And again, it goes to that overall unit thing I was just talking about. In the point you made about these guys being friends, yes, they were in a fight, but this kind of looked like three guys, you know, three buddies fighting with one another that had each other's backs. Like, it was just cool to see. Like, there's a lot to dig your teeth into with this Natural Vibes trio, and I had a ball with this undercard. You know, the opener was whatever, it just, you know, it was a match, but Okuda Fuji, Skywalker Minoru versus Ishida and SB Kento, and that Natural Vibes versus RED match, to me, are worth your time. I thought they were a lot of fun.
I mean, someone there had to work Ultimo, so why not Problem Dragon?
I should note,
that's the rationale there.
The one thing to note of that opening match, and we'll talk about him more as we unfortunately get to night three, but La Estrella no longer doing the Sasuke special. That sequence where he would normally set that up, he's back to doing a very plain Jane Tope Suicida. So that experiment appears to be over with that move, which is for the best, because quite frankly, he's just too small to do that move.
I'll save my La Estrella talk for the next show.
Unfortunately, yes.
We're gonna have an adult talk conversation in about 10 minutes. But then we get into the tournament matches. The first match was in Block C. Yamato walking into the building at 2-0-1 with 5 points. Clear leader of the block. Hyo was at 0-1 with 0 points. Double count out after Hyo gets superplex on chairs, and Yamato is tripped at 19 in 5 minutes and 35 seconds. This was like one of the most fun 2.5-star matches I saw in a long time, because big brain Hyo sleazing it up, like knowing what he was going to do, just ruining Yamato's weekend, was a great storyline.
Mike, I loved it. I loved this so much. I mean, I screamed when Kaito Ishida tripped Yamato, and Yamato bit the dust on
ate
his
shit.
Way to the ring. It just totally ate shit on a perfectly timed trip. You know, we talk about the Dragon System, how I think it's the most talented roster on Earth. Nobody can do what they do. Their timing is perfect, and that includes Kaito Ishida tripping Yamato as he runs back to the ring. And then, as you put it, this man ate shit. Took an incredible bump. We've seen this guy go through tables, be hit with chairs. He's probably taken a barbed wire board bump at some point in his career. This man went all out for a trip spot, and I popped huge for it. I loved it. This is, again, look, it's a 5-minute match. It's not anything great from a work rate perspective, but it was the perfect story. I understand why people may not be super into the double countout stuff. For some, I guess, historical perspective on it, I don't think they're directly tying it back to the M2K double ringout committee, which if you watch all of the Toriumon from 2000 that is up on the Durangate Network, which that entire year is up there, you'll notice a reoccurring theme in M2K matches where they are trying to get their opponents in the midst of a double countout in order to make the fans mad and ruin the hot fighting that would go on in Toriumon. They used this term called the double ringout committee, where they were exclusively trying to get double countouts in their matches. And it's a very similar thing with Hyo. So it goes back to some history there. There's a reason they're doing it, and there's no better guy on the roster to do it with right now than Hyo. The trip spot, just awesome. Just Charlie Brown missing the football level of whiffing and biting the dust. Just tremendous stuff.
It just is something that, you know, another great thing about this promotion, and this promotion that still, like, we were a little bit trepidatious about how their 2021 started, but this tournament has had them return to form in a way that, like, of course Dragon Gate was going to return to form. It's Dragon Gate. But how they just kind of just committed to this, said, like, for 5 minutes, this match is going to be all about Big Barry and Hyo and just sleazing it up and just making Yamato have a miserable night, and executed perfectly. Like, I understand, like, people were just are out on just kind of like the cheatingness and the sleaze, and they just think that, like, oh, like the Dragon Gate cheating gets over the top here, but this was incredibly effective. Like, Hyo, as someone who is the bottom person in RED, has had such a great purpose since November, and I love how they revisit it, and I love how everything happens with Hyo, and it's just one of the more fascinating things in wrestling right now.
Yeah, like I said, he's got his character work dialed in, he's got his place on the roster. If you want to talk about history, if you want to talk about calling back to the past, look no further than the main event, Dragon Kid versus Susumu Yokosuka in the B block of King of Gate 2021.
Yeah, but right before we get, just so we can clarify here, there are no points awarded in a double countout. This makes Yamato's standing in the tournament just insane, because he has a time limit draw and a double countout, so no points were awarded. Yamato stays at 5, Hyo stayed square at 0. So, main event, B block, Dragon Kid versus Susumu Yokosuka. Dragon Kid walked in this match 2-1 with 4 points, really could have pulled away in the B block, and Susumu Yokosuka 1-1 with 2 points, really kind of needed to keep up with pace. Susumu called back to the history case, as you were alluding to, world liner in 16 minutes, 13 seconds. So that moves Susumu to 4 and is square. Basically, with how everyone in the block was basically at 4 points at this night, is you either at 4 or 2, it's a complete race in the Blee block. B block, not Blee block, B block. Gleet has done things to my brain, Case.
Look, Gleet has done things to all of our brains, Mike. You are not alone in that. As for this, not their strongest match ever. I think I remember at the time, their last match was March of 2019. It was that Memorial Gate show where they wrestled for the Brave Gate title. And I think I remember being much higher on that than you were. I really liked that match. And I certainly thought that was stronger than what they did here. But as Jay pointed out on Twitter, these guys have been doing this for 20 years now. They haven't really slowed down. They've only gotten smarter. Their execution is the same, if not better, than ever before. I went 3.5 stars on this, but it's you know, it's still artwork to some extent, like what they were doing, the counters towards the end, the world liner to finish. It's Susumu and Dragon Kid. It is a winning combination every time out.
Yeah, I went 4 flat. I love this match. This was, it's something that, like, you talk about the Brave Gate match, how that kind of underwhelmed me a little bit. No, this was showing, like, the best of them in 16 minutes. I love the subtle knee work that Susumu was working the knee for obvious reasons for Dragon Kid, and Dragon Kid sold it very subtly. Like, there was a moment there, like, after his 619, where he, like, after he rotates back in the ring, where he kind of, like, stumbles for a second, and it was something that you could tell it wasn't, like, an actual stumble. It was very intentional. I thought that was really cool. And we talked about, like, the crowd and how we wanted to have a better crowd. The crowd knew that what Dragon Kid and Susumu Yokosuka means, and the crowd was up for this main event.
I believe, and I could be wrong, and this is where Mike Spears' trivia of Dragon Gate will be stronger than mine is, I believe the only time the Open the Dream Gate did not headline Kobe World was their match for the Dream Gate in 2006. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah, that was the they won the semi-main event. Main event, Shima versus Magnitude Kishiwada in a no ropes match, winning the main event. I have always heard the reasoning behind that was Shima was like, well, we're gonna do a no ropes match. I mean, we're going to take apart the ring. The ring is taken apart. Nobody can wrestle now. I guess we have to headline. I guess the Sumo Dragon have to go on before us, I guess, because, well, you can't wrestle with no ropes. I mean, that's what me and Magnitude are doing. I enjoy Shima politicking his way to the top of the card no matter what.
I mean, that's what he does. that's what he did.
He is the Jeff Jarrett of junior heavyweights in Japan, and I mean that as a compliment.
Yeah, and the go-home was natural vibes, you know? I mean, they were there supporting their friends because they're friends, you know? I mean, yeah. Sasumbu got level at this match. Like, it was a big match for the block there, so of course they're going to support Sasumu, and that let KZ kind of do the go-home speak in his neighboring. Like, I think Ebetsu is a suburb of Sapporo. I'm not positive about that, but made sense for that there.
Mike Spears, night 3, King of Gate.
All right, so 23rd, they had 329, which was higher than their last time that they were in Sapporo. So they ended up doing okay. The opening first two nights were a little bit down, but then the closing night was able to do it, and probably for pretty good reason. So this time, Case, we're going to talk about the three undercard matches, and then we'll leave Speedstar Final Countdown Sapporo as its own thing, I think, just because, like, it's Masato Yoshino, and he deserves that. Match 1, Natural Vibes versus Masquerade, Natural Vibes, Susumu Yokosuka, Kinki Horiguchi, and UT, and then the team for Masquerade, Kota Minoura, Jason Lee, and Australia. Kota Minoura got the win on Kinki Horiguchi with the Engranaje in 14 minutes and 32 seconds. Match 2, Ryo Saito and Problem Dragon versus Don Fuji and Bukudomo Dragon. Don Fuji, Super Chokeslam Problem Dragon. So Problem Dragon, tough weekend for the guy. I mean, he's kind of plugged in there, and then he has to eat a Super Chokeslam to lose that there. And then match 3, Ultimo Dragon and Yasushi Kanda versus the RED team of Diamante and SB Kento. And SB Kento got the win with the SB Shooter in 9 minutes and 11 seconds. And do you want? I'm going to rant about La Estrella. Do we want to talk about that? Do you have any thoughts about the other two matches before I go off?
Yeah, let me quickly work backwards here. I really wish when Ultimo came into the company and he did that like 4 or 5 month program with Eita, where they ended up having a singles match, which I was just recently reminded of. I completely forgot that happened. I really wish SB Kento was in the company when that happened, because I thought SB Kento and Ultimo were really compelling in this match, and this was, you know, a meaningless, forgettable undercard tag. But those two in the ring together, it just kind of felt like something was there. And I certainly don't want an extended Ultimo push ever again, but if it's going to happen, I hope it happens with SB Kento. As for Shimizu and Fuji versus Problem Dragon and Ryo Saito, this was 11 minutes of my life that, look, I love this promotion. I did not want to dedicate 11 minutes of my life to this match. I watched it because I really am trying to make it a goal to watch 100% of What Makes Tate this year. But God, I just hated that because it went 11 minutes. In my experience, you now have the floor for La Estrella Adult Talk.
Yeah, so I thought that the match, too, was a comedy match. It was good, clean, fun. Don Fuji wanted to fight with Mr. Nakagawa. I mean, that amused me immensely there. But so, La Estrella, we have seen him have issues with the Sasuke special that took it out of his repertoire. I saved another note that I noticed. You know how he would do the handspring or the headstand evade where he'd go into the ropes and he'd flip and he wouldn't touch the bottom. He wouldn't touch the mat as he flipped backwards. Mm-hmm. He's now doing the handspring backwards. So they've curtailed that as well. But now, out of his like 3 really exciting moves, botched the rope run drop kick. And I'm going to keep kayfabe here, I think. I think that that's an important thing to do. But the thing that made Shun Skywalker so impressive before his excursion, before really, really up through Mochizuki Dojo before he went lone wolf with Benkei, was the fact that there was always an element of fear with him, because he would always, like, there'd be moments where, like, where he would be doing, like, his senton springboard over the top rope where you're just like, oh God, he could really eat it here. But he always would, like, pull it back. He always, like, would work out just the way, and it came off of, like, this guy is death-defying. Like, there was the element of fear there. There was elevated risk here. And it's something that, like, we likened it to Hayabusa. Remember, Case? Like, we're like, it's very, like, kind of Hayabusa-esque, where it's, like, you can't look away, but you're looking through, like, your fingers and your hands over your face.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
you get to the other end of that spectrum, and that's where you get, like, Sabu. And Sabu, where he has, is, like, the botches, but it's part of the charisma and aura that he pulls off with it. La Estrella, as we said when he debuted, had a lot of the Shun Skywalker tendencies that we were really excited about. But the problem is he can't execute his death-defying moves, and he doesn't have the charisma or aura. That instead, he looks completely, completely overwhelmed in the moment. And I think that La Estrella, everything else about his wrestling, I think he's very solid. I think he's up to the Dragon Gate standard. But it's very clear to me that, like, for the rope run thing, that's balance. Like, that's balance, and you get that with, like, repetition. The Sasuke special, you mentioned you think that he's too small to, like, kind of, like, do a dive like that. Still something that, like, repetition. You would be able to figure that out, that you're not having that botch at one of the big five shows. And then the handspring, I mean, that's just something that, you know, you're taking a risk each night. Doing the handspring is probably better for the guy's health. But the fact that La Estrella has been pushed to this level, he is a Dreamgate champion. Less than
Triangle
six.
Gate champion, not a
Triangle
Gate.
Champion. Thank you. I was thinking about Shun Skywalker. Thank you for correcting me there. Triangle Gate champion. Less than 6 months in his career, has not suffered a fall. He has not taken any falls whatsoever, and he's getting like this rookie supernova push. That at this point, with how he's been lately, and there's of course room to improve. I remember I was a low person on Daya. I thought that Daya, in a lot of ways, was kind of underwhelming until he got over his health things and his. And sickness, and he really came together and became a truly exceptional wrestler. But they didn't have Dragon Daya as Triangle Gate champion. They didn't have Dragon Daya in a unit where he was incredibly protected. Shun Skywalker took a whole lot of falls in Mochizuki Dojo up until he won the Rookie Ranking League, and they started differentiating himself. It was like you would have Hyo, Yoshioka, and Minora, and then Shun Skywalker was kind of, other than Mochizuki, like the number two in the unit. There. That's not the case in Masquerade because La Estrella is protected. The fall pose in that unit is Jason Lee right now. So we have this guy who I don't think I'm unmasking when I say he's under the age of 22. Okay, so you think that's fair to say?
I would be shocked if he was older than 22.
22, I'm just saying that safely. Who is really like capable of these death defying things, but it's clear to me that he is not at a level of execution with them that is to the Dragon Gate standard. And it's something that there's a reason why there is the period before, like when SP Kento was Kento Kabune and he ate a lot of falls. There was when Hip Hop Kakuta was Madoka Kakuta and was eating a lot of falls. We've not really seen enough of Funky Jackie Kamei to know, but he took a whole lot of falls as well. When you give a push like this, that really, other than like Strong Machine J, does not come along very often in Dragon Gate. The supernova thing is a very new thing. I mean, the last real supernova was Yamato. You have to be able to perform. And it's clear to me right now, Case, that La Estrella is not to that standard now. And it's frustrating because it's actively hampering a unit that seemingly is getting their act together. You know, I mean, Shun Skywalker and Kota Minora have become stronger mic workers. They're willing to put Jason Lee in main events and knock it out of the park. Then you have La Estrella. And I think that's an issue, and I think it's something that he's very young. I bet he's going to improve, and these are the things with repetition that get better. But when you have someone as Triangle Gate champion, and when you have someone who is not performing to a level into an expectations, you have to do something, change course, or you take a step back and be like, all right, what is wrong here? And I know I'm doing a tough talk here, but I don't think I'm saying anything that's unfair.
No, he's six. I mean, he's 6 months into his career, which you can say, well, he's only 6 months into his career. But the flip side is, this is Dragon Gate. If you're 6 months in with a character and you're messing up your signature spots, plural, because he's now messed up a handful of those signature spots, that becomes an issue. Because in other promotions, you know, look, it's obviously not good, it's noticeable, but here it really sticks out, okay? This is a company that preaches perfection. Everything is perfectly timed. He is not perfectly timing his moves right now. And Mike, I thought you did a tremendous job there of illustrating the two different branches you can really jump off there of the Dragon Daya route or the Shun Skywalker route. For Daya, I had to sell you on it. I think Daya himself had to sell you on it. I was on board from day one. I think his execution is such a level above most guys in wrestling when it comes to his aerial maneuvers. And we've obviously heard the stories about, you know, Genki Horiguchi saw a video of El Hijo del Vikingo. I was like, what's the big deal? Dragon Daya can do all of that. And I firmly believe that because Daya is so innovative. He's so creative. And he's a guy that really doesn't mess things up, especially those big spots. Shun Skywalker was a guy that messed some things up, okay? His, you know, there are some undercard matches that are truly terrifying, and there are some big matches that he had later on in his career.
That Dangerous Gate match.
The Dangerous Gate match with Mochizuki and Skywalker against Yamato and BB Hulk. It's one of my favorite Twin Gate matches ever, because there are times in that match where the wheels are so close to coming off. Skywalker does a rope walk moonsault in that match that is quite frankly fucking stupid, that he somehow pulled it off and didn't die. And there's so much of that with Skywalker that outside of, you know, again, Dragon Daya has the execution, Shun Skywalker had that charisma. It really sucked you in, and you see it now that he's a much more fluid wrestler. You see it come in the form of babyface fire, and you see it come in the form of this guy who, again, in a promotion where you have to be able to talk and lead with the microphone, and Shun still really can't do that, but he's shown enough babyface fire within the ring to where, you know, I don't think it's the end of the world. I think he's been a credible, successful Dreamgate champion. Maybe there are fans in Japan that would disagree with me, but from what I can tell, Skywalker's been over as champion, so I think it's a win there. The issue is that Estrella doesn't have the execution, he doesn't have the charisma, and when you have none of the two, it becomes an increasingly larger issue every time he steps foot in the ring.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not like it's something that he can improve. I mean, the issue is that he's not just like a mask guy. He's a mask guy with over his face, you know, like you don't have like a mouth port, like his eyes, you can't see because they're covered up there. So it's not like he can emote and show babyface fire that way. So you have to lean more on execution, right?
Yeah. And for him right now, you know, again, when he hits all of it, it's spectacular. And it's this bizarre high ceiling, low floor where, you know, we could be looking at a Triangle Gate match at Kobe World where Masquerade's defending, and it could be a 4.5-star match, and he could be the focal point of that match because there are going to be nights where he's on, and it's going to be thrilling. I mean, he's still, like, his signature spots are incredible. The issue is that if one of them goes wrong, it just sucks the wind out of the match in a way that is almost unique to him in a way, because that Triangle Gate match at Dead or Alive was really on its way to building to be a nice little match, and once he messed up that dive, there was no return from that. The air got sucked out of that building so quickly, and this is a gimmick that relies on, again, nailing everything and being this death-defying junior heavyweight, and he is not that right now. And it's, like I said, becoming an increasingly larger issue every single time he wrestles.
Yeah, and it's something where I just, again, this is something that with time and like repetition, but I'm trying to be very careful because they're keeping kayfabe with this. The person, I'm going to try to say this, Case, and I'll just say like right now, if you think I'm going over bounds here, we'll edit it out immediately and we'll not make air. The person that is under the Australia match only had one exhibition match that made tape.
I think two, technically.
Two. And as an exhibition match, you aren't doing the same stuff.
Well, I don't think you're speaking out of line, nor do I think I will with this. We know from people that know La Estrella that when he got this gimmick, they were like, oh, that's weird. Didn't really think of him as a flyer. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, yes.
I hope it works out, but I still have a little bit of stock. I think in the right setting with the right opponents, again, this guy can be electric, but I don't like the in-between right now. I really was bummed out by the missed rope running dropkick in this match, because again, it was like, oh god damn it. Like, this match was moving along fine, and then things just grounded to a halt once again, and that is becoming the issue with La Estrella, something to monitor going forward.
Yeah, and again, like, we sometimes we like doing tough love sandwiches here. He is incredibly, when he's on, he's the rookie of the year, like, hands down. Like, there's very few people I think that are as good, unless Hook starts wrestling and is just as good as people expect, rookie of the year, or maybe Jake Cargill. But Raleigh, it would be Hook.
My vote would go to Cargill off of the two matches she's had so far. I've enjoyed her more than La Estrella as the total package. Because Cargill, you have another podcast where you could put Cargill's fucking unbelievable. Every fucking week, she blows me away.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things that when I watched the show, like, I felt my energy sucked out of this. Like, I can only imagine if I was in Sapporo and saw it. Like, it just was something that I felt like put a little bit of a pallor on the rest of the undercard when the two other shows' undercards were very strong undercards, you know? Like, it started off on a bad foot.
Let's talk about these block matches. Or I guess let's talk about Yoshino first, the final countdown Speedstar in Hokkaido. What were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so it was Masato Yoshino teaming up with high-end Yamato and Dragon Kid versus RED, BB Hulk, Kaido, Shida, and Hyo. Yamato won with the Galleria in 15 minutes and 19 seconds. Before the match, Hyo said he said, I'm going to ruin this match as well. And by God, he tried. Love Big Brain Hyo. I'm really proud of my small leopard son today, if you haven't picked up on that. I thought Yoshino looked good here. You know, it's one of those things that, like, sadly, I feel like it's tracking going forward. I thought that Yoshino, he wasn't in this match a lot, but, you know, I mean, it worked out pretty well here. And I thought that, the general humor that everyone has with Dragon Kid just amuses me so much that, like, it added, like, another thing to this. So it was, like, a 3.25-star match.
I thought Yoshino was fine. I think I liked his overall performance a little bit more last weekend in Fukuoka. There was something about I talked about how much I liked the undercard on night two and how I think there's stuff that was really worth going out of your way to watch. The undercard on this show, the opening match goes 14 and a half minutes. You get the 11-minute comedy match, the 10-minute SB Kento and Ultimo Dragon Tag match, and then this goes 15, and there was something about this. I was like, man, everything on this card is just going a little too long right now. I needed every match before this to be cut down by like 3 minutes, and maybe I would have been in a better mood to watch this. But when you're an hour into the show, and I'm looking for block matches at this point, I'm excited about these block matches that are coming up. To me, this dragged a little bit, not by the fault of anyone in particular, just a very long, strenuous undercard for night three.
That's fair. And then afterwards, Yoshino did, like, his farewell promo to Hokkaido. The other thing about this match, this was a Hyo match. Like, that's a very rare thing to say. Like, this match was based around Hyo. Like, there's a reason why I said, like, he's, like, the star of the weekend, because everything around his matches were revolved around him.
Which is awesome to see. This idea, you know, that he's in a Yoshino farewell match where he's not eating the Torbellino and the Sol Naciente, and that's the end of it. The fact that they could build that character into a Yoshino match is, I think, saying something about his standing at the company right now. I think people are really buying into this Hyo. I called it the ultimate opportunist earlier. I'll refer to that again. This act that he's doing right now, I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, no, it's tremendous. And then we get into the block matches, the meat of the show. The first one was in the C block. It was Shun Skywalker at 1-1 with 2 points versus Keisuke Okuda, who is 0-0-1. Of course, his 1 point came from that time limit draw with Yamato. Keisuke Okuda is having a rough tournament because he lost this match when Shun Skywalker fell backward on him while he locked into Dojima Sleeper in 13 minutes and 57 seconds.
Which, as Skywalker later pointed out on social media, not the first time he's won with that move in Hokkaido specifically, or maybe it was just Sapporo in general, but I believe it was Hokkaido, where he's also done this kind of choke reversal into a roll-up, which is, you know, a nice little callback there. I thought this match was a ton of fun. This was a rare Bravegate versus Dreamgate matchup. It obviously happened at World 2009 with Shima coming in as the Bravegate champion and Doi coming in as the Dreamgate champion. Can you think off the top of your head, Mike, any other times this has happened?
Oh, wasn't it like a Tiger's Mask when he was Bravegate champion?
Oh, Jesus. Did Tiger's Mask challenge for the Open the Dreamgate title? That is something I will look up as I talk here.
There might have been, like, it might have been non-title, but I thought that there was, like, because it was during that Dragon Gate versus Osaka Pro War, right?
That sounds right. Yeah, he wrestled... Well, no, because, okay, so Yoshino... Did Yoshino win the belt at World 2010?
No, he won it beforehand. I don't think he won it at World. I thought he won it at Compilation Gate.
It was Yamato versus Yoshino. And he did win the belt. That was Yamato that won it at Compilation Gate, and then Yoshino that won it. So I believe they did Yoshino versus Tiger's Mask in a Dreamgate versus Bravegate match that was specifically for the Bravegate title, that Yoshino ended up winning and then vacating the Bravegate. That is what happened there in the summer of 2010. For those that cared, which is only me and Mike.
Well, yeah, that was the lead up. Wasn't that the lead up that they had that tournament that Naoki Tanizaki won?
I think that was 2009. Let me see what they did with the Bravegate here as we dive deep into Cage. It is past the hour mark of the show, which means It is a free-for-all in the cage match. No. So Yoshino won the belt from Tiger's Mask and vacated it. And then the tournament ended with Pac winning the Bravegate belt. And that is what began Pac's Bravegate run.
That's right. That's right.
He beat,
okay.
He beat Susumu in the finals in a match that I have not seen but would like to track down. And then from there went on to have the greatest Bravegate run of all time. So not bad by Pac there. As for Okuda versus Skywalker, and Okuda, if he, you know, keeps on holding this belt, will certainly have a claim staked as the greatest Bravegate champion of all time. I don't think he'll get there, but it's a conversation that we can have by the end of his reign. Super fun match. Really, really physical. I thought these guys did everything that played into each other's strengths really well. Big strike exchanges, big counters, just a lot of stuff that you would expect from these guys. And it ends with a clever finish where Skywalker gets the win and you protect Okuda, who continues to lose and lose and lose, but he's losing in very unique ways.
Yeah, it's an interesting tournament for Okuda. It's fascinating. I mean, did Okuda already have his match against Hio? No, he has his match against Hio tomorrow, as of the time of recording. And he has that match in Niigata. Okay, so just a fascinating tournament for him. Just fascinating.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know where it goes. Like, I don't know what the next step for Okuda is once he loses most of his King of Gate matches. I think he'll beat Hio, and you guys will know by the time this episode is released. I think he'll beat Hio, but then he's still towards the bottom of his block. And, you know, granted it was a loaded block, but still, you know, it's not like a strong challenger has necessarily emerged from what he's doing, because you obviously
UT.
Have... That's the thing. I think UT is the way to go here, because he's the one guy that would make sense. You know, he had the time limit draw with Yamato. Yamato's not going to challenge for the Bravegate belt. We've done the Hio match. Skywalker's a Dreamgate guy at this point. So yeah, you're looking at UT being the front runner for another challenge, which I think would be great. I mean, I obviously fully support that, but it's a weird tournament for him. I think it's less about Okuda and more about the fact that in this loaded block, somebody was going to have to lose, and Okuda's
right.
The guy that he's not just losing, they're doing something with his losses. So it doesn't really bother me from a booking perspective. I went 3.75 on this match. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I went 3.75 as well. It was my match of the night. And then we had the main event. This was in the B block. This was KZ coming into this match 1-2. So he really had to get a win here with 2 points versus Eita, who is 1-1 with 2 points. KZ won with an inside cradle after getting rocked twice with Imperial Uno, just kind of grabbed it by his teeth at 18 minutes and 2 seconds, so getting close to the time limit there. And, you know, this was a match that I have a feeling we might be a little bit divergent here, so KS, go ahead and give your thoughts first.
My second favorite match of the weekend. I went 4.25 on this. It was, you know, we were talking a lot about Eita last week and just kind of how he always seems to shine in King of Gate, and we always specifically point to his 2016 run where he has the matches with Tozawa and the match with Susumu, and kind of the summer of 2016 was when, you know, at least for me, it was the most I've ever believed in Eita as possibly being a guy, and he would go on to reach higher heights after that, but it was always kind of a pulling teeth situation for me. I understand why he's in that role, but I wish it was at times anybody else in that role. But we talked about how King of Gate typically plays to him and his strengths. He's able to have these compact matches. He's able to break away from the usual big match Dragon Gate structure, and he's able to do his thing. And this match was not that. This match
No.
was a classic overbooked car crash style Dragon Gate big match main event, and I thought KZ and Eita went out there and ripped it. There was just a ton of stuff that I liked in this match. One, you can say, I think the crispness of both guys. I used that term earlier, talking about the natural vibes, double team moves. Here, they had a level of chemistry that I really thought they lacked in their Gate of Destiny match. That was a match I was kind of let down by. I remember the finish coming out of nowhere, right as things were starting to build. This had a tremendous build to the finish. These looked like guys that knew what they were doing in the ring with one another. A couple of big moves, a couple of big comebacks from KZ at multiple times in this match. You have the ref bump, which I loved. Eita, for all of his faults, and I do think Eita has many, Eita's ability to have refs bump in this beautiful way, I believe it was him that was responsible for pulling referee Nakagawa in the way of the go-to-hospital dropkick a few years ago, which is a gif that I have in my head that, unfortunately, I don't know if the listeners know what I'm talking about. I don't even know if Mike knows what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you're... because Nakagawa sold it like murder. Wasn't that during a Doidarts match?
No, that was on a big pay-per-view. I don't remember what. Okay. I don't know why Eita and Yamada would have been in the same ring as one another, because that's a pretty protected pairing. But I believe, and I hope I'm right, that Eita was responsible for that. But Eita's a guy that has been able to do some pretty creative ref bumps over the year. Mike mentioned in the Jason Lee versus KZ match the headbutt spear that KZ does and how he kind of perfectly executed it there. Well, this time he goes to hit it on Eita, and Eita pulls referee Yagi in the way, and it's a great bump, it's a great spot, the crowd reacted to it, and then you get all the hijinks, you get the RED interference, you get the chairs, but instead of KZ eating these awful moves, he hits Eita with a powerbomb onto the chairs, a Canadian Destroyer onto the chairs, and an impact onto the chairs, which is a wild sequence of events, and then Eita still kicks out. He gets up to his feet, Imperial Uno kick out, Imperial Uno schoolboy, and KZ gets the win. This felt like an epic. This felt big. This is the kind of match that they typically don't have in King of Gate. I'm glad the tournament isn't filled with matches like this, but KZ beating the biggest and baddest heel in his hometown in this way, I was totally into, like I said, 4.25.
I went 3.5, and all your points are correct there. Like, it did feel like a big match. It did feel like that Eita has such a great command of being a heel here that it's going to be something I miss when he eventually has that face turn, which who knows if that's going to happen at any point at this point. You know, I mean, we've been calling for that for like the last year. Who knows? But for me, the thing that got me was it had a really hot start with like the opening exchange going into the Mission Impossible step up Tope Conolo. And then it really kind of slowed down for like the next, I would say, 6 or 7 minutes. And given how the show was, just kind of took me out of it in a way. Just because of the undercard you're talking about. And it's no fault of them. No fault of them. This is on me. Like, I own up for this. This is my failing, not anyone in this promotion's issues here. But as soon as like the interference started happening, the impact onto the chairs that the crowd went nuts for, and that finishing stretch that you laid it out perfectly there, it really like snapped too. And again, this is a me thing, and that's why I went 3.5 on it.
I would be curious to know from people what they thought of this match. I asked at Open Voice Gate on Twitter what everybody's favorite King of Gate match was up to this point. I did not see anybody mention this, which I didn't necessarily expect, but I also know, I know of people that are either very pro KZ and anti Eita, or pro Eita, anti KZ. And I would like to know their thoughts on this match, just because, you know, they're two guys that I think have roughly made a career out of a similar style, but I find KZ to be much more palatable than Eita. Eita, obviously, is someone that, you know, when he hits, it's incredible. I would file this under the hit category, but when he misses, it is dreadful, and we have seen far too much of that over his career. But I thought they came together here. Like I said, I thought this was better than the Gate of Destiny match from 2020. It had a much more coherent build. I mean, I really wish this match was given that big stage instead of being tucked away on this little Hokkaido show at the end of the King of Gate tour. Because I really thought, if you're a fan of the Dragon Gate house style, if you like those big matches, if you like the interference and the drama that Dragon Gate is able to build upon, this is the match for you. Like I said, 4.25 stars for me. And on a pretty okay show, I would say show 3 was probably the least enjoyable of the weekend. This was a very strong way to close things out.
Oh, no, the block matches saved the show from just being mediocre, in my opinion.
Yeah, very like, much so. Because night two was fun all around, and night one, having 3 tournament matches there really helped, because the undercard was nothing, but you get the 3 tournament matches there, so I'd put night one ahead of night 3.
No, I completely agree with you. So this finish moved KZ to 4 points and kept Eita to RED try to beat down KZ. They get fought off, and then Eita. So it was referee Yagi in this match. It wasn't Nakagawa. Or Yagi might have been ringside, but he got attacked by Eita on the way out, and then we got the natural vibes go home as Eita got a bid farewell to Sapporo. Not Eita. KZ got a bid farewell to Sapporo until they come back, likely in December. So
yeah, those dates are booked. It's I think the second week of December, like it was last year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they usually do, and I mean, like, they always have to like they like doing the semi-annual shows there, so weekends there, and it's always nice. And then they go, and then they went to Hakodate, also in Hokkaido, on the 24th. Block matches that happen in Hakodate, as I accidentally scrolled down a little bit too far. There we go. In Hakodate, the block matches were UT and Hyo in the C block. UT won with the Passion in 8 minutes and 12 seconds, so we didn't get Big Brain Hyo there, though. I'm certain in his mind he was being big and brain. And then, interesting thing that's going to really play into the B block, Dragon Kid and Jason Lee went to a double fall. So both guys got 1 point there. That's the only ways time limit draws or double falls there. So they're exploring every way that you're able to score points in this tournament case. And then the next night, they were in Sendai. They're in Tohoku, which they had a Dragon Gate Future Open match, exhibition match, with Ryu Fuda, who we've not seen yet. He has not made the future shows, who's from Miyagi, which is the same prefecture as the show is taking place in. And then the guy that we both are kind of a little bit high on, Takuma Fujiwara, who's from neighboring Iwate Prefecture in the opener. Just wanted to throw out there. So we have yet another kid coming up through the ranks. But the block matches at that time were Kian Gate Block A, Kota Minora defeated BB Hulk with Ingor Nahe. Block B, Eita defeated SP Kento with Imperial Uno. That's something I would be interested to see that match, see if that was going to be played up like how Ishida and Hyo played it straight, or if they're going to get really sleazy there. And then the main event was Yamato defeating Kaido Ishida in Block C for the Galleria, which puts us, this is what the blocks are right now, okay? So let's get into this. We don't know the cards for the remaining league matches. We do know that there'll be the last chance Battle Royal. Assuming that it's 15 people, they might be able to have all of them in there. I'm going to run down the scores case, and we've talked a little bit about what are the scenarios in the blocks last week. We have some updated ones for this one. Block A, Naruki Doi finished at 2 points as he was pulled due to COVID precautions. Benkei finishes at 0 because he had COVID and was pulled. Currently, Kota Minora is at 8 points with one match remaining. Takashi Yoshida is at 6 points with one match remaining. And then both BB Hulk and Diamante are in the clubhouse at 6 points. Block B, KZ is at 4 points with one match remaining. Susumu Yokosuka is at four points, but with two matches remaining. Dragon Kid is in the clubhouse in the lead at 5 points. Jason Lee is at 3 points, but with one match remaining. And then Eita and SP Kento are both at 4 points with one match remaining. And then in the C block, we have Shun Skywalker, who's at 4 points with two matches remaining. Yamato is the clubhouse leader at 7 points, and he's done with his tournament. Keisuke Okuda has two matches remaining, but he is at 1 point. And then UT and Kaido Ishida are at 4 points. They are eliminated with only one match remaining. And then Hyo's is more concerned with like making people have a miserable day with his big brain. He's at 0 points with two matches remaining. He is eliminated as well. So, Case, what are the scenarios we have to see who's going to win their blocks in King of Gate?
Oh, God, you're going to try to make me do some mental math here. I feel like I'm in the Brian Alvarez position, which is not an enviable position.
You did this last week.
Well, Minora versus Yoshida, that match, which happens on, it'll happen by the time we're done recording, or by the time this airs. So you'll know the winner of the A block then, because Minora versus Yoshida is winner take all. My A block predictions were not exactly correct last week. We got to the same destination. I think the way I laid things out was more exciting than what Dragon Gate did, but, you know, they have a pretty decent track record, so I'll let them stray off on their own little adventure there. But the A block, by the time you're hearing this, will be decided. It'll be between Minora and Yoshida. The B block, everybody is still alive. It's KZ, Yokosuka, Dragon Kid, Jason Lee, Eita, and SP Kento. I gotta go KZ here. He's got the one match left against SP Kento on May 30th. That seems like a win for him. Susumu has Jason Lee, which is likely a win, but Eita, which I'm going to say is a loss. Any objection to KZ winning the B block? Do you think there's someone that has a stronger case?
Well, if Susumu beats Jason, he holds the tiebreaker to KZ, so KZ's eliminated.
That is a very good point. Do we think Susumu drops those two matches? Because, Jason's not going to win. As much as I would love for it to happen, Jason's not going to win.
Maybe Jason wins that match. And then the Eita match, I can see Susumu going 0-2 here. I can see him going 0-4, and then KZ wins, and he wins the block because he'll be the only one at 6 points with a direct win over KZ over Ata, so he wins that. He wins that head-to-head tiebreaker.
Did we undersell Ata in this tournament? Is there a chance that he wins this block?
I think that if it's not KZ, it'll be Ata. Then KZ wins the second chance battle royal at this point.
So let me think out loud for a sec, because both KZ and Ata have one more match. KZ's got SP Kento, which I think is going to be a win. Ata has Susumu, mm-hmm. which could go either way. And KZ does have the tiebreaker over Ata, so...
Yes.
All right, so I think KZ's going to win the block.
Yeah, and the other thing is that KZ has his last match in Fukuyama on the 30th, whereas all the other matches will have happened at that point. So...
C block, yeah. I think you're right there. I think KZ's going to win the B block. C block, look, Yamato's going to win the block. Shun Skywalker's going to have a chance to win the block on the final night, and Hyo's going to beat him, and Hyo's going to finish with 2 points, and Skywalker's going to be relegated to the Battle Royal, and it's going to be fucking awesome. I wish that show was making tape.
Yeah, Fukuyama making tape. I mean, one, I want to see how big Hyo's brain gets there, because it's not just like him beating him. Shun has to score all 4 points available. He can't get a time limit draw. He can't get a double fall. He has to beat both UT and Hyo to win, because Yamato has a head-to-head tiebreak. So he has to beat him in the clear there. So it's very fascinating, because you're looking at a second chance battle royal that would either have KZ or Ata as good strong contenders there. A block, really no one else in that block can really come out of that. SB Kento, they could have that there. Or they could have, like, Keisuke Okuda gets his act together during the battle royal and is the shocker, the shocking person in it. You know, like, there's a lot of ways to go with this battle royal. I wish it made tape. I wish this whole Fukuyama show makes tape, you know?
Yeah, I'm actually very annoyed that it's not. It seems like that's something that Dragon Gate could throw a single cam show up there on the Dragon Gate network, and we could watch this, because it obviously plays into the June Cork and Hall show, which as of the time of recording, we believe is going to take place. Like you said, there's no one coming out of the A block in the Battle Royal. I still am of the mindset of Minora, KZ, Yamato, and Skywalker are going to be your final four. I think Yamato, KZ, and Minora are going to be your block winners, and I think we'll see Shun win that Battle Royal, assuming he's in it. Should be exciting. I've really enjoyed the tournament so far, and unfortunately, up until the finals, this is all we have that'll make tape.
Yeah, and I'm with you on the block winners. Ata is someone in the Battle Royal I could see winning. You know, like, that's interesting. Like, this Battle Royal, assuming that all 15 people can be in it, it's wide open. Other than A Block. No one in A Block's winning that Battle Royal. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Yoshida, Hulk, and Diamante, you aren't winning this thing. I mean, you, like, look at it, Jason won't win it either.
I don't think SB Kento does. I think when SB Kento makes the semifinals and or the finals of King of Gate is going to really mean something, and this year is not that year, so you can rule him out. Dragon Kid would be cool, I guess, but I don't see that happening. It just seems very uncharacteristic to how they treat him. So, yeah, I think we're looking at roughly the same things we predicted at the start of the tournament. I obviously, in hindsight, wish I would have really committed to Minora winning that block. I went with Doi instead of my initial predictions with the idea.
But we didn't know.
With the idea of Minora finishing second, I thought he would put up a good fight. But obviously, Minora's going to take that block now, or at least, God willing, he's going to take that block. And that's King of Gate.
That is King of Gate. We will be back in a couple of weeks to talk about that. But, Case, we do have something that is going to happen for everyone next week, though.
Ooh, please tell me, Mike.
As we started doing a couple weeks ago, the first episode, full episode, of Speedstar, a Masato Yoshino retrospective will be happening. And we have a special guest that will be coming aboard there. Should we say who the guest is, or should we leave it as a surprise until we record?
Let's leave it as a surprise, just because I know that's a busy man, and I would hate to overpromise and underdeliver.
Exactly. But it's going to be really fun. We have our three matches picked. We'll be finding ways that for the ones that aren't on the network to make them readily accessible for people. And I'm really stoked about it. I mean, it's one of those things that when we did those two matches that we did a couple weeks ago, I mean, Masato Yoshino, man. Like, it's just one of those things that revisiting his career, it's like the best way to kind of treat someone of that stature in this company. You know, I mean, someone that, I mean, for 21 years, is like a true innovator and is one of the there will never be another Masato Yoshino, and it's something that I'm looking forward to this the series that we're going to go. It's not going to be weekly, as we said. We'll find good places to have the show, and we might go a little bit after he retires just to see if we have more people who want to come on and there's more matches we want to cover, and I'm really looking forward to it.
One thing that we can say for sure is that assuming the Cork and Hall show happens next week, like I said, that is supposed to be Thursday, June 3rd, Mike and I will be recording shortly after the fact on that day for your up-to-the-minute King of Gate coverage and Cork and Hall coverage. So expect, if everything goes according to plan, expect to open the voice gates next week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is true. That is, like, the first of the month. That's right. Man, my whole entire, like, my mental right now. So, yep, Pudge is sick again, and it's just, like, one of those things that's completely, like, put me in the tank. Hashtag free Pudge. He caught a 7-day ban because some idiot brought their dog to a daycare while they were sick. So, yeah,
As I told Mike before we started recording, didn't really, like, I guess it makes sense that dogs could be sick. Never really thought about it before. It makes sense. Yeah. Like, I wasn't surprised when I heard it. I was just like, oh, yeah, I guess that happens.
Yeah, dogs get sick, but Pudge is doing better. He's almost out of medication. It's just one of those things that, you know, when, you know, a family member, a dog, a cat, another animal, or someone's sick, you know, it's just kind of like you get put in a little bit of a funk, and it's just kind of things. But, you know, what always pulls me out of the funk is doing Open the Voice Gate with Case. So we had an absolute blast here tonight. Anything you wanted to hit on before we got out of here?
Mike, where can you find us on Twitter?
Well, you could find both of us at Open Voice Gate. Case is often there posing the questions, the tough questions there about Jason Lee being one of the best super juniors in the world. And then we also have news postings where we post the shows. Just follow Open the Voice Gate. It's a good time. You can follow me at Fujiheya with two eyes, like the man Don Fuji. You can follow Case at _InnerCase. That's going to do it for Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week with the first episode of Speedstar and as well the conclusion to the 2021 King of Gate. I got the tagline wrong. It is the Dragon Gate #1 championship. We'll be doing that next week. Take care, everyone.